The New Musical Express, a large British pop paper, says that when asked why they called themselves the Beatles, they laughingly put off this question by saying,
"Well, I had a vision when I was 12, and I saw a man on a flaming pie, and he said, 'You are Beatles with an A,' and we are."
And when George Martin told the people at EMI that he was issuing a record by a group from Liverpool called the Beatles, everyone at the monthly supplement meeting fell about laughing, thinking it was another of George's gimmicks, and asked if it was really Spike Milligan or Peter Sellers in disguise.
Oh, well, they asked me what the name was, and I said, the Beatles, and they all fell around laughing. And, I mean, it was a silly name, let's face it. And they thought it was another of my goon jokes, you know. They thought he's come up with another comedy record, and he's just spoofing us about it. And then when I played with them, they thought I was gone slightly mad. And nobody believed in it at all. And I had to really fight within my own company to get the thing promoted.
On December 17, 1962, the Beatles appeared on their first TV program. People in Places, a Granada TV show, films them at the Cavern. They got 35 pounds. On December 18th, they begin their last 14-day season at the Star Club. On this final visit, they were recorded by another British artist who was in Hamburg, Teddy King Size Taylor. And here's what they sounded like then. John later said that it was Hamburg that did it. That's where we really developed. To get the Germans going and keep it up for 12 hours at a time, we'd really had to hammer. We would never have developed as much if we'd stayed at home. We had to try anything that came into our heads in Hamburg. There was nobody to copy from. Back in London, George Martin was pleased with the moderate success of Love Me Do. But he realized that his objective now was to find a strong follow-up.
Love Me Do was about the best song I could find from them at that time. And I was convinced it still wasn't the one I needed to break through. And in fact, it proved to be so. We only got up to about number 17, I think. And I was looking for a real hit song. And so they couldn't play me anything. They played me all my stuff, and I didn't think anything was any good. So I went around Tin Pan Alley looking for songs, and my old friend Dick James came up with a song that had been written by Mitch Murray called How Do You Do It? And I listened to this, and I said, yep, that's a good song. That's a good commercial song. Give it to the Beatles, and I'll have a number one hit. So I took it to the Beatles. Said, right, this is what you're going to record.
And so we said, well, we don't really like the song, actually, George. We said, but do it, you know, and we got the word off of Brian Epstein, you know, do it. Doesn't matter if you don't like it, you do it.
So we recorded it. John did the main voice. I think Paul sang occasionally on harmonies. And I think it was a very good record.
How do you do what you do to me? I wish I knew. If I knew how you do it to me, I'd do it to you. How what you do to me, I'm feeling blue. Wish I knew how you do it to me, but I have no clue. Give me a feeling in my heart, la-la, like an arrow passing through it. Suppose that you think you're very smart, but won't you tell me how do you do it? How do you do what you do to me? I wish I knew. If I knew how you do it to me, I'd do it to you. Give me a feeling in my heart, la la, like an arrow passing through it. That you think you're very smart, but won't you tell me how do you do it? How do you do what you do to me? I wish I knew. Wish I knew how you do it to me. I do it to you. Wish I knew how you do it to me. I do it to you. Wish I knew how you do it to me. I do it to you.
And at the end of it, I said, fine, great, super.
But we still didn't like the song, you know. We were a bit conscious of our image. We didn't just want to be like everyone else, you know, because it was all changing then. So, I mean, you'd meet people, you know, like Derek Jewell from the Sunday Times, and he'd be sort of saying, you know, well, what about Cliff Richard and all that? And we felt like sort of the generation after Cliff. You know, he was a bit more that sort of people wrote him songs and he was an idol and sort of stuff. And our thing was a bit anti that. It was a bit more sort of just group and we write our own stuff and it's a bit different than that.
And they said, well, do you mind if we record one of our own? I said, well, if you can give me a song that's as good as that, record it, fine. But otherwise, that's going to be your next record. I said, well, give us a week. And they came back with a song that I'd rejected previously, which, because they'd done it too slowly. And in fact, I told them that they needed to speed the whole thing up and make it fast, make it much more vibrant. And this was Please Please Me. They'd done it as a kind of very slow rock number to begin with. And we listened, they played it to me again in the studio, and I modified a little bit of an ending and so on. And I worked on it with them. And at the end of the session, I was knocked out because it really was a great record. And I said to them, gentlemen, you've got your first number one hit.
Please Me, their first number one hit in Britain. A fine arrangement of those famous Beatle block harmonies, an effective bass line from Paul, and good vocal and harmonica from John. The B-side featured some good harmony in their simple, romantic style.
I love you, cause you tell me things I want to know. And it's true. Can't believe it's happened to me. I can't conceive of any more misery. Ask me why, I'll say I love you, and I'm always thinking of you. I love you, cause you tell me things I want to know. It's true that it really only goes to show that I know that I should never, never, never be blue. Ask me why.
say I love you, and I'm always thinking of you. I can't believe it's happened to me. I can't conceive of any more misery. As we wind, I'll say I love you, and I'm always thinking of you.
Although How Do You Do It was discarded by the Beatles, the song didn't stay in limbo for long.
And How Do You Do It, I then had up my sleeve. And when Brian brought me his next line in the stable, which was Jerry and the Pacemakers, I said to Brian, OK, let them do How Do You Do It. And Jerry did it, and that became number one too.
The Beatles took on Dick James as their music publisher, who had been recommended by George Martin. Dick was very impressed with Please Please Me and worked like a demon after the record was released on January 11, 1963.
I put on my record player and played Please Please Me, and I just hit the ceiling. And he said, what do I think? I said, I think it must be number one. And I phoned a friend of mine, Philip Jones, who was a light entertainment producer at ABC television, and he was just starting the show called Thank You Lucky Stars. You know, the break started to come virtually from that moment.
On February 2nd, 1963, the Beatles begin their first national tour of Britain with Helen Shapiro at the top of the bill.
I remember sort of certain incidents like Paul, or I think it was Paul, practicing his autograph loads of times on a photograph and coming in to show me, you know, what do you think of this one? What do you think of that one? And George always talking about being rich.
On February 11th, the Beatles record all the tracks for their first album, as Please Please Me climbs to the top of the charts in Britain, the first of an unbroken chain of hit records which lasted until May of 1969. George Martin realized that they should act fast to cash in on what they had already achieved with this single. He thought the best thing to do was to have the Beatles record the best of their live show.
I knew darn well that we couldn't record an album of original songs. So I said, well, obviously the thing to do is to record all the stuff they do in their act. I'd been to see them at the Cavern. I'd seen what they'd been doing. So I knew their repertoire by this time. And so I just selected all the stuff that I knew they could do at the drop of a hat. And I got them down to the studio. So I said, right, we're going to record Rollover Beethoven, we're going to record Money, we're going to record Chains and so on, Anna. And it was rather like a performance, actually. We started at 10 in the morning, 11 in the morning, I think, in deference to their long Beauty Sleep. And I think we finished about 10 at night. Norman Smith was at the controls, and he got a good balance, and it was just knocked off like a live performance.
The opening track on their first album gave an indication of all the excitement that was part of their live show. It was basically a Paul McCartney number, with John suggesting he change a line.
Actually, what happened was he took out one word, which would have made it very wrong. The first two lines, I did it going home in a car one night, and so I wasn't really thinking too much about it. The first two lines originally were, she was just 17, and she'd never been a beauty queen, which sort of just sounded like it rhymed to me. Anyway, when I saw it the next day and played it through to John, I realised that it was a useless line, you know. So we just sat down and tried to think of another line which rhymed with 17 and meant something. We eventually got, you know what I mean, which means nothing. Means completely nothing at all.
Paul uses his raunchy rock voice on this early Beatle classic.
1, 2, 3, 4!
Here's an early song of John and Paul's. It's one of the eight that was included on the album. It shows some good vocal work by McCartney and Lennon.
The world is treating me bad, misery. I'm the kind of guy who never used to cry. The world is treating me bad. Sure, I won't see her no more. It's gonna be a drag, misery. I'll remember all the little things we've done. Can't she see she'll always be
John Lennon was a big fan of R&B artist Arthur Alexander and performed a few of his numbers in their live show. One of his most famous pieces, A Shot of Rhythm and Blues, was one of the live numbers that never got on to a Beatles album or single. Here, John sings lead on Alexander's Anna. The Beatles were great admirers of Phil Spector and of Carole King and Jerry Goffin. In fact, they wanted to be the British equivalent of them. Here they do a version of Chains written by King and Goffin and given the Spector Sound production. It was originally done by the Cookies.
So sweet, I'd like to kiss them, but I can't break away from all of these chains. My baby's got me locked up in chains, and they ain't the kind that you can see. Oh, these chains of love got a hold on me, yeah. Chains of love, chains of love, chains of love.
This next song was originally released in 1960 by the Shirelles on the B-side of Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow. It was cleverly given to Ringo to sing and was probably one of their most requested numbers during the Beatlemania period. On the album, we finally hear the version of Love Me Do in which Ringo is playing maracas and Andy White is playing drums. Only on the single released in Britain and Canada is Ringo playing drums. See if you can hear the difference. You'll notice that John and Paul are singing better on this version.
Love me do, someone to love.
Another Shirelles number was included on this first album, a song written by Burt Bacharach, Hal David, and Barney Williams. John sings lead, with Paul and George supplying the backing vocals, and George Martin playing piano.
It's not the way you smile that touched my heart. It's, it's not the way you kiss that tears me apart. Oh, many, many, many nights go by. Baby, it's you. Sha-la-la-la-la-la-la. Baby, it's you. Sha-la-la-la-la-la-la. Sha-la-la-la-la. You should hear what they say about you. Cheat, cheat. Sha-la-la-la-la. They say you've never, 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 ever been true.
Cheat, cheat.
Oh, it doesn't matter what they say. And it's true. Come on, nobody, nobody. 'Cause baby, it's you. Baby, it's you.
George was given the vocal spotlight on the next number. It was covered by another Brian Epstein artist, Billy J. Kramer. John, who wrote the piece, says it came from a song in a Disney film his mother used to sing to him.
You'll never know how much I really love you. You'll never know how much I really care. Promise not to tell. Whoa, whoa, closer. Let me whisper in your ear. Say the words you long to hear. I'm in love with you. Ooh. Listen. Do you want to know a secret? Do you promise not to tell?
McCartney wanted to do Besame Mucho for the album, but did A Taste of Honey instead, double-tracking his voice.
a taste of honey,
tasting much sweeter than wine.
Do-do-do-do.
McCartney explains their songwriting.
What we normally do, though, even if I go away and write a song, I mean, normally the reason I write it is on my own, or John writes it on his own, is because it's daft to sitting around waiting for the other one to come up and finish the song off. If you happen to be on your own, you might as well finish it off yourself, you know. So what normally does happen is that if I get stuck on a middle eight or the middle bit of a song, I'll give in, you know, knowing that John will, when I see him, he'll sort of finish it off for me, and it'll be a 50-50 thing. That's what happens with a lot of them.
Here's a superb piece of close harmony from John and Paul, and another fine example of the Lennon and McCartney songbook. After the session was assumed over, the Beatles were having tea when George Martin explained that they needed one more. They were quite exhausted, but as the story goes, they went back to the mics and recorded The Old Raver by the Isley Brothers. Engineer on the session, Norman Smith, explains.
Now, John's voice was in such a state, I remember, that we had literally got to get it in one take. Otherwise, I don't know what would have happened. We'd have to probably wait a week for him to get his voice back. So we coughed about three at a time of these cough things, these throat things. And when he'd suitably anaesthetised his throat, we started. And I thought, please God, don't let anything go wrong from my point of view.
Please Me, Ask Me Why, and P.S. I Love You were also included in this, their first album. Also in February 1963, Northern Songs, their British publishing company, is put together by Dick James.
I said, what I would like to do is to set up a company in which they, meaning John and Paul and Brian, you know, whoever they would agree among themselves, they would have 50%, my company would have 50%, we'd have a 50-50 venture in which John and Paul would be signed exclusively to that company so that they would receive their writer's royalties and a percentage, whatever they agreed among themselves, that much percentage of the equity to the extent of 50% shared between them. And I said, I feel that since you're all from the North, perhaps it ought to be called Northern Songs. And before the end of February, we had in fact incorporated Northern Songs, where every song after Please Please Me, they had agreed that I, since I'd done the job, such a fine job on Please Please Me, should always be published by Dick James Music, and it still is today.
On March 9th, the Beatles begin their second nationwide British tour with Tommy Rowe and Chris Montez. By the end of the tour, the four upstarts from Liverpool become the headliners of the show, to the dismay of the two American stars. The touring of Britain was a relief to the Beatles. They'd had enough of Liverpool and were looking for new ground to break. They had felt bored on their last two trips to Hamburg, and so it was a thrill for them to be up with the top names in Britain and America. Please Please Me was replaced in the number one position on the UK charts by their old rival Cliff Richard and the Shadows. Then, ironically, the number that they had turned down, How Do You Do It, replaced Cliff Richard. The song was done by their old Liverpool friends Jerry and the Pacemakers, who were also managed by Brian Epstein. On April 8, 1963, John Charles Julian Lennon is born at the Sefton General Hospital in Liverpool. And on April 12, the Beatles released their third single on the Parlophone label, From Me to You, backed with Thank You Girl. It was a song that John and Paul composed on the bus during the Helen Shapiro tour. With guitars in hand, they were reading a column in a British pop paper called From Us to You, and the idea developed from it. The lyrics were simple, but the music had that Beatles sparkle and magic with a good musical hook thrown in for good measure. The B-side was an old song from the pens of Lennon and McCartney. Brian Epstein took over another Liverpool artist at about this time. His name was Billy Kramer. Brian put a J in the middle of his name and gave him a new backing group, the Dakotas from Manchester. He persuaded George Martin to produce them as well. On April 26, 1963, Billy J. Kramer released the Lennon and McCartney song, Do You Want to Know a Secret?
You'll never know how much I really love you. You'll never know how much I really care. Listen, do you want to know a secret? Do you promise not to tell? Whoa, whoa, closer. Let me whisper in your ear. Say the words I love to hear. I'm in love with you.
On May 18th, they begin another national tour, this time sharing the bill with Roy Orbison, who was very big in Britain at the time, and Jerry and the Pacemakers. Here's what Roy says about the tour.
I told the boys that if they kept their hairstyle, and it was short by English standards, it was very short, but to keep that hairstyle and to keep the clothes they were wearing, let it be known that they were English, for sure, and then get on the Ed Sullivan Show or something like that, then they'd be as big in America.
During this tour, they began to cause riots, though not the sort which made the national papers, which were still ignoring them. On this tour, tickets for their shows appeared on the black market. Jelly babies were thrown at them on stage after George Harrison had mentioned that he loved them. They were also mobbed at the theater, backstage, and at their hotel. Neil Aspinall, a friend from the Liverpool Institute who was now their trusty road manager, found it harder and harder to get things done. So another friend, Mal Evans, the bouncer from the Cavern, was taken on to help him. On July 12, 1963, the Beatles released an EP. It was called Twist and Shout because of the popularity and the demand for the song. It went straight to the top of the charts, even though it contained four cuts and was not a single. On August 3rd, the Beatles appear at the Cavern for the last time. MC Bob Wooler explains.
The Beatles played their last date at the Cavern, August Bank Holiday, 63. They never came back again. I think Paul paid a sentimental journey visit about 68. And I do believe John visited Matthew Street on some occasion behind his shaded rose, just to point out to someone special to him that that was where they played. They played the Cavern more times than any other venue in the world. We had them there about 300 times, and it was almost my honor and my frustrations at times to announce them.
On August 23rd, they released their fourth Parlophone single, She Loves You. This is the start of the Yeah, Yeah, Yeah period and the beginning of real national fame. Liverpool was now becoming famous as the city they had come from. This one tune characterized the Beatles' appeal and magic and was the song that was most associated with the start of Beatlemania in Britain.
John and I wrote it together. We were in a van up in Newcastle somewhere. We were just going up to our hotel, and I originally got an idea of doing one of those answering songs where a couple of us sing about She Loves You and the other one sort of says the yes, yes bit, you know, yeah, yeah, answering whoever's saying it, you know, but we decided that was a crummy idea anyway, as it was, but that at least we had the idea to write a song called She Loves You then, and we just sat up in the hotel bedroom for a few hours and wrote it, you know.
Paul's father had an interesting comment about the lyrics.
And he'd say, son, there's enough of these Americanisms around, couldn't you sing yes, 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 just for once, you know, couldn't you? You don't understand, Dad. It can't be yes, yes, yes. It can't. It wouldn't work. Are you sure? You know, and all that. But, you know, that's great. That's Dad's, isn't it?
She said she loves you, and you know that can't be bad.
You know you should be glad. With a love like that, you know you should be glad. With a love like that, you know you should be glad.
Producer George Martin tells us an interesting sidelight to the recording of it.
I used to sit in a high stool in the studio, and John and Paul would stand in front of me playing their acoustic guitars, and they'd sing it to me, together. And George would join in on the choruses. When they played She Loves You First of All, I thought it was great, but one thing struck me as being very odd. And that was they finished on this curious singing chord, which was a sort of major sixth, with George doing the sixth and the others doing the third and the fifth in the chord. But it's extraordinary what you're singing, because it's, to me, it's a bit old-fashioned. They said, oh, it's a great chord, that. No one's ever heard it before. Of course, I'd heard it lots of times before. However, I realised it was good enough not to change, and we let it go at that. And, of course, that was really the most important part of the song.
The flip side of She Loves You is sort of a hidden classic by them, continuing in the Oh Yeah vein.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. Many times before, it's not like me to pretend, but I'll get you in the end. Yes, I will, I'll get you in the end. Oh yeah, oh yeah. I think about you night and day. I need you and it's true. When I think about you, I can say I'm never, 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 never blue. So I'm telling you, my friend, that I'll get you in the end. Yes, I will, I'll get you in the end. Oh, yeah, oh, yeah. Well, there's gonna be a time when I'm gonna make your mind. So you might as well resign to me. Oh yeah. Imagine I'm in love with you. It's easy, cause I know I've imagined I'm in love with you many, many, many times before. It's not likely to pretend.